Gil, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So you're in Israel right now. Where in Israel are you located?
I'm in Tel Aviv.
In Tel Aviv, I see. And just to introduce you to the audience here, I understand that you're leading a group of the people who has families who are still being held hostage by Hamas.
I'll be precise. My name is Gil Dickman. I'm 31 years old from Tel Aviv, and my cousin, Carmel Gat, is held hostage by Hamas. She's 39 years old, and I'm part of the Hostages Families Forum, which is a forum of many hostages family members who dedicate all their lives basically to get their hostages back home.
I see. And you have many relatives who are still being held hostage?
No, I have one cousin who is still being held hostage, and the wife of my cousin, Yarden, used to be held hostage, but was brought back in the deal between Israel and Hamas just at the end of November.
I see. I also want to start with saying my condolences to the Israeli people and to the Jewish people for the horrible pogroms that happened on the 7th of October. It's just horrible to witness, and I think it's being said that it's the worst slaughter of Jewish people since the Second World War.
Yeah, that's right. My grandmother actually was, she was from Europe, and she her two parents were killed during the Holocaust, and she came to Israel to make sure that this kind of thing never happens to her or to her children or to her grandchild or to her grandchild's cousins. And now we have this, and we couldn't imagine that that was even possible in days like these, but that's where we are, and this is a nightmare for us, and we can't really believe this is happening.
It's so absurd. It's almost like it's not true. Like I would have thought that with all the, it's like it feels so distant, because in school here in Norway we're taught about the Holocaust and the Second World War and how important it is to always remember that never again, you know, that saying that never again, we shall always remember this so that history doesn't repeat itself. And then suddenly we come to 2023 and then we see these kinds of things happening again. It's just unreal to experience that.
Yeah, it is unreal. Actually, when October 7th started, it started at 6:30 a.m. The sirens started, and for me it started as just a regular day because it's something that happens in Israel. But when I started seeing the videos of terrorists standing inside the kibbutzim, it's all green behind them, and with one just small buildings, small white buildings and green grass, and just a swamp of terrorists just swamping the area. The first thing I thought was, this couldn't be real. This must be fake news or some kind of, psychological terror from Hamas. But then when I stumbled upon a video of my aunt there, she was led by terrorists inside the kibbutz, then I said, oh my God, I guess this must be real because I know her and it's definitely her. And a few hours later, I found another video of her shot dead.
I'm so sorry to hear that. My
Yeah.
condolences to you. It's I don't
Thank
know
you.
what to say even. It's like, could you describe what that was like for you then, start of that day? Was it like a shock, like what you were describing, like you couldn't believe it's true? Could you take us back to that? Because, and part of the reason for this podcast, I want to talk to you is to make sure that everybody here in Norway, which is so distanced geographically and
Yeah.
culturally, perhaps, that people understand that how true this is, how real this is. Could you try to explain for us what it was like for you?
Sure. So I'll describe you this morning from beginning to end. So I woke up at 6:30 from the sirens. Our bedroom, it could be turned into a safe room. So my partner, she just woke up and closed the window, and that was it. We went back to sleep because it's something we thought was something usual. Then we woke up and we started getting news about things happening in Be'eri, and I have family there. And people started messaging me saying, is everything okay? And I replied just automatically, yeah. And I didn't even check. because I couldn't believe that there was something wrong with my family. And but then I started seeing all the videos and I started recognizing places I know. And I opened the TV and I saw on TV and a news broadcast. And it was Dani Kushmal was in the studio. He was talking on the phone to Ella Ben-Ami. She was in Bailey in a safe room. And she called him and she said, I just saw a picture of my father in Gaza. And he is just wearing t-shirt and boxers. He's held by terrorists. I can see him. And I'm right here and there's nothing I can do. Please help me. And I saw this and I was just like, I couldn't believe that that was true. But then I started, you know, scrolling through videos, messaging my relatives in Bailey to try to find out what happened to them. And they didn't answer. And then I found the video. Then I found the video of my aunt that was our first week we saw that Salha described my family there. And we received a message from my uncle, who's my aunt's, he's my aunt's husband. And he told us, I'm sorry that I cannot elaborate. I'm separated from the others. And I think that they've taken them all. And we that's where it all connected. We, as I understand it, October 7th, 10:30 a.m., the terrorists just break in the house of my uncle and aunt in Kibbutz Be'eri. The first one to see them was my aunt. She saw them just coming and she turned to her husband and told him, shh, they're coming. So he went back to the bedroom and to the bathroom inside the bedroom. He closed the door and locked it. It's not a safe room, but for some reason, the terrorists did not break in. They just, you know, messed the whole bedroom. And they shot inside the bathroom, right at the fire just missed him a few centimeters. And he just stayed there. And through the crack in the bathroom window, he was able to see the terrorists taking his daughter, Carmel, 39 years old. She's it's his eldest daughter. And he just saw them taking her and just vanishing at the end of the road. That's all he saw. And he stayed there locked for the whole day until he was evacuated. And it was just a miracle that the terrorists never broke in the bathroom. And my aunt who was murdered and my cousin who was kidnapped, they weren't the only ones there, because in another room, in the safe room, there were also my cousin Alon, his wife Yarden, and their 3.5-year-old daughter Geffen. They were the three of them in the safe room. They were hiding from the terrorists, but you know, that day, being in the safe room wasn't the safest choice, because terrorists were deliberately going to the safe rooms trying to get people out in order to kill and kidnap them. So when Alon understood that the terrorists are trying to break in the safe room, understood that he couldn't lock the door for long enough. So he decided to just take out the light bulb and to cover his wife and his daughter with a blanket. And he went out and said, take me, I'm the only one here. And the terrorists took him and tied his hands together and his legs together, put him near a car and just put a gun towards his head. But then they went back in and broke in the safe room again because they didn't believe that he was the only one there. And, you know, then understood that there was no way that she could actually keep the door locked. So she went out, opened the door with Geffen in her arms and said, don't kill us, just take us. I want to save my daughter's life. Take us. And the terrorists took the three of them and started driving. They put another neighbor in the car named Tal Shoham just in the trunk of the car with two terrorists in the front seat and a driver and one terrorist in the back seat. They were all driving towards the fence between Israel and the Gaza Strip. And just a few meters before the break in the fence, there came an IDF tank who was just driving by. And Alon wasn't even sure whether the tank was driven by IDF soldiers or maybe terrorists, but the terrorists inside the car just broke out and started running for their lives. And the car kept driving. The driver was still there. And while the car was driving, Alon understood that that was his chance and Yarden's chance to save Geffen and save their own lives and break out. And so he was able to, you know, be released from the time, and he told Yarden now. And they both broke out the doors and started running. And the terrorists started shooting at them. They were both running. Yarden was barefoot and she understood that there was no way that she could run fast enough. So she stopped Alon, handed Geffen to Alon and said, run. And Alon took Geffen and ran. And the last thing he saw was Yarden, his wife, hiding behind a tree with her hands on her head like this, ducking to avoid the bullets of the terrorists. That's the last thing he saw. And he just ran with Geffen. And Alon and his daughter were able to stay hidden right near the border for hours. It was 11 a.m. and until about 7 or 8 a.m. they stayed there. They found a hiding place and Alon told Geffen that they were playing hide and seek and she must make a sound. And he said that she was wonderful. And when the sound went down, they just started approaching the kibbutz, you know, slowly to make sure that they don't encounter any terrorists because it was all swamped with terrorists, as he knew. He found a towel. He made a white flag from it. And so if he encounters some kind of a force, then they won't shoot him. And around 7 a.m., 20 hours after they were able to run, they found their way to the kibbutz. And Alon encountered the task force and just waved at them and said, don't shoot me. Took a phone from one of them and called his brother and told him, oh, I'm alive and Geffen is with me and I don't know what happened to Yarden. And he didn't know that his father was evacuated. He didn't know that his mother was killed. And he didn't know that his sister was also kidnapped and was now in Gaza. And Alon and Yarden's brother were actually coming back to the same place where Alon saw Yarden for the last time. They were trying to find her. They encountered a group of terrorists and the soldiers who were with them were able to kill the terrorists who were attacking them. And they found the tree where Alon last saw Yarden. But they weren't able to find Yarden. They did find footprints. And they didn't find any, you know, blood or signs of fight. That's how they came to the conclusion that Yarden must be alive and was probably taken back by the same terror group that took them in the first place, back in the same car and to Gaza, which turned out to be exactly true.
When did you get some kind of videos or some kind of communication from Yarden in Gaza? Did you get any kind of life signs?
No, not at all. Hamas does not give you any life signs. They don't want you to know whether your relatives are dead or alive. They want you to live in doubt. That's some kind of their sick psychological terror.
Yeah.
And sometimes you receive videos and they are just posted on Hamas channels in order to, you know, spread fear and hate. Sometimes it's lies and sometimes it's just no evidence of your relatives after they're already been shot or killed or whatever. It just happened, you know, 1 week ago to a friend of mine that she's also part of the forum, also fighting for her brother, Itai. Both of her parents were killed and she was fighting for her brother. And she received a video of her brother after he was being killed, probably by Hamas.
It's insane. It's like...
Yeah, unbelievable.
Not only do they kill people and kidnap people, but it seems like they have this kind of sick joy from it as well. You know, it's like another level of demonic ways of being.
Yeah, they're bragging. They're telling the world what they're doing. And somehow, some parts of the world see it and don't believe it because it's so unbelievable. That's what's driving me crazy. That the fact that people can do such a horrible thing to you and the world can look at it and say, this is so horrible that I don't believe that it actually happened. And I'm here to say, I saw it. You know, I recognized my aunt there. I know that it's her and I know that they've done this to her. And we now know that Yarden was there and alive because she came back in the deal at the end of November. She came back and she told us what happened to her. She told us how she was held and she told us that she was guarded by men and that she had nothing to protect herself and how horrible it was. She told us that she didn't even know whether her husband and child were alive or not until one day she actually happened to hear a radio broadcast and she heard my voice. And I was dedicating a song to my aunt Kinneret, her mother-in-law, that was murdered that day. And I just mentioned that we miss Kinneret and we really want to see Carmen and Yarden again, my cousin and the wife of my cousin. And from the fact that I didn't mention her husband or her child, she understood that both of them must be alive. And that's how she first realized that they were still here looking, waiting for her. That's how she knew. And she didn't get any other information about what's going on in Israel. You know, when hostages ask what's going on in Israel, their guards tell them there is no Israel. And when we tried to offer to get you back home, then Israel rejected you, which is totally false. But that's the psychological terror that they use on us and all the hostages who were there would suffer horrible, horrible things. We know now from testimonies of other hostages who came back that hostages suffer the worst kind of tortures and violence, sexual violence. The worst thing you can imagine are happening there inside cages. They're holding people in cages and in tunnels. And it's not imagination. We have actual evidence of it. So these are your worst fears are just coming true.
I think it's a key word that you said that it's so evil that people can't fathom. People don't have a way of understanding this. So it's like almost a psychological defense mechanism, perhaps, that they said, no, that can't be real. That's just too evil. People can't be like that. Well, guess what? People can be like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Was she able to tell, I don't know how much you can say, but was she able to tell you how it was there, how she was treated, what it was like being held there?
So she told us that it was, of course, you know, not knowing when she was coming home and knowing that she's guarded by men and she, at no point she could, you know, say no if they demand something from her. Well, that's the worst kind of fear for a woman who's held by men. And we know that men who are held there are also sexually attacked. And we know that she didn't get to meet Carmel. She didn't even know she was there until she heard my voice in the broadcast. But we know from other hostages who were you know, brought back home in the second day of the ceasefire, that they were with my cousin, with Kamel, who's still there. And they told us that she's physically okay. They told us that on the first day, they had a guard who was vicious. We don't really know what it means to be vicious, but we know we were, of course, very, very worried. And they told us that she was sort of a guardian angel for them and keeping them safe and having meditation sessions together, practicing yoga. She was practicing yoga with them in this horrible place that they were in, which is also unimaginable. But in a way, it made us very happy because this is exactly what we would accept, Kamed. If we try to imagine Kamed being held somewhere,
we would want her to be doing yoga with other people that she could treat, with people that she could be strong for. And it was such a great thing to hear that she was still herself. But we don't want her to be herself there. We just want her to get back home. It's too much. It's more than 110 days now. And it's way, way too much for anyone to be held like this. We don't even know where she is right now because the two hostages were taken from her. She didn't even have the chance to say goodbye to them. They just took them. I hope that she understands that they're now home, but she probably doesn't know for sure. And we don't know whether she's alone now or with other hostages. Has she been moved? Probably yes, but we don't know where. We are just in horrible, in just a horrible void of not knowing anything.
Were they down in the tunnels? Where was that? Where they were being held?
We can't say.
Okay, I understand. But. As she told you, was she able to manage to keep the hope of someday getting out during that time?
We know that they were all imagining together how it would be to be finally released from this captivity. But I don't know. I think that she understands that we're fighting for her and we must be fighting for her. But I know that, you know, when the car took them from the kibbutz to Gaza, they went through the corner where her mother was murdered. So she saw her mother after she was murdered. And I don't know what she knows about all the other family members. I guess that she doesn't know whether her brother and her father and her brother's family are all alive or not. I don't know what she knows about Israel. Maybe she thinks we're all dead. I don't know. I really hope that she manages to hold the hope and understand that we're all fighting for her and that the whole world now knows about the hostages in Israel and that her pictures are all over the world in New York and in LA and in India, where the place that she loves the most, and of course all over Israel, and that people are, you know, having yoga sessions in her name, dedicated to her all over the world. I really hope that somehow this gets to her. Maybe she gets glimpses of TV and it's shown there. I don't know. Like Ben happened to hear my voice. Maybe Carmel sees this. Maybe Carmel sees something and it gets to her and it builds hope in her. But it's really hard to be hopeful in times like these, even for us. So, of course, for her.
How about Yarden? Is she able to be back to her normal self after an experience like that? I can't imagine how it must be in getting back to normal society. And does she function like her normal self?
To me, it was amazing to see how normal she was after what she's been through. And I would think that she would be, you know, she would take it much harder, but she's so brave and so powerful. And you find the strength in yourself in such, you know, cases. She's now back with her daughter. They're together now. And it's such a happy sight to see them together, back with her husband and her brothers who were doing, you know, going all over the world to try to find her. And what she's really worried about is the fact that there are still hostages there. Many hostages who came back now think a lot about the hostages who are still in captivity because they know how dangerous it is. They know that the war puts their lives at risk, and they know that it could get really, really horrible there. Sorry.
And I read in the newspaper that some hostages have really guilty conscience for being set free because they're thinking about the hostages who are still there. Like, why me? They should have been set free instead of me. And they have feelings like that.
Yeah, you know, my cousin was able to run for his life and save his life and left his wife behind. And but that was the brave thing to do because he was able to save his daughter and he was able to save himself. And you never know if he could actually save his wife, or maybe he could have gotten the three of them killed. And it's the same thing for the hostages who came back. It's really good to have them here. It's really good that lives have been saved. And we are going to fight, you know, as hard as we can. And people are trying to stop us. Many people are trying to stop us. We're not going to stop. And we're going to make sure that all the hostages are home. I really hope that they are all alive. We know that many of them are probably not, but most of them are. Most of them are alive. And we have to consider the people that we don't know whether they're dead or alive as if they are alive. Because if you don't know whether someone is alive or not, you have to treat them as if they're alive. So you make sure that you get them back. We had many hostages. We were told that we're probably dead. And then they, you know, the ambulance of the Red Cross came and they just went out and they were alive. And it was alive all along. So we have to treat them all as if we know that they're alive and try to save their lives. And I think that talking about it, spreading the word, you know, mentioning the fact that there is still life to save, and this is not an Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because, you know, Hamas, a terror organization, they're also killing Muslims. They're also killing Palestinians as a part of that, what they're doing. It's a mission that we have to spread the word that this is a life and death conflict. And we're on the side of life. We're trying to save life here, the lives of the hostages. And when we get them back home, then this whole horrible tragedy could be over.
That's a really important difference that you're saying there, because I think that Israel symbolizes life, while Hamas, they celebrate death. Like it seems like, from what I've read and what I've seen, it's like they don't even care about the life that you have right here, because they're going to paradise or whatever. So they don't care if they live or die.
Yeah, that's what they believe. That's jihad. That's the belief that if you kill enough, or it's a part of a battle. Of a battle for in the name of Islam, then you die and you are sanctified by the fact that you are that you killed enough people, and you become sacred, and you think about the afterlife. We don't believe in this here in Israel. We believe in life right here, right now, and we try to save life. And that's a really major difference between the two sides. And I think it's a major difference of what we're fighting for. Because the other side is fighting to bring more and more death, both to Israelis and Palestinians, to make sure that we can live here in peace, and that there could never be peace between Israelis and Palestinians. And we are fighting for life and for the future in which we can live here in peace, Israelis and Palestinians, Jews and Muslims here. I still believe it. I think that even Carmel, while held in captivity, she still believes it. And this is what we're fighting for.
And also, what I thought was so horrible was seeing the first videos from Israel, and when people were taking as hostages. It wasn't just the Hamas taking them, but there was also, like, seems to me, like normal, ordinary people in Gaza, like cheering them on and running around the motorcycles and the trucks and the pickup jeeps, and like celebrating, like, yeah, you killed Jews, great, like celebrating this. It's so absurd to see.
Yeah, I saw this also, and this is very sad to see. But I think it's the result of a terror organization holding 2 million Palestinians as hostages for more than a decade. And when you live in horrible terms like this and horrible conditions that, you know, that you just build the hate towards the other on the other side of the border. So this is what happened. So I think people who did this are, of course, you know, they're guilty of what they did. But what we have to fight is not specific individuals, but an ideology, and an ideology that spreads hate towards other people because they're different from you, because they believe in other gods, or because they are coming from a different race. And this is what I think we're fighting now. And I really hope we can win this, but it's going to be hard. And I know that before we can defeat this ideology, we have to make sure that people that we can save their lives are back home.
You mentioned the Red Cross earlier. And I've read some newspaper where it says that you asked for, I don't know if it was Israel asking for, but some people from Israel were asking for, like, can we at least have Red Cross going in there checking on the hostages to see if they're okay? And,
yeah.
And what I understood is that Red Cross said, no, we're not going to do that. Could you, have you read a lot about that? Could you explain?
So what's going on with the Red Cross is that they don't have any power to do this. You know, it's not something they can actually do. You can ask them to go and visit the hostages, and they can come and knock on the doors of Hamas and say, hello, please let us visit the hostages. And if Hamas says no, there's nothing they can do. And that's exactly what happened. And it happens many times with terror organizations, and the Red Cross has no power over them. The Hamas organization must agree to have the ICRC, the Red Cross people come and visit the hostages. And if they don't agree, then there's nothing they can do. And I understand that Hamas doesn't agree because they don't want anyone, A, to know whether people are dead or alive. They don't want them to know their condition that they're held in. And they don't want anyone to know where they're located because they're afraid that we're going to find them and just release them.
Also, why do you think Hamas took hostages? Do you think their motivation was to be able to bargain and get their prisoners out? Or do you think they had a real a strategy with taking hostages?
I really don't know. And I'm trying to stay, you know, I don't want to start getting in the heads of the people who murdered my people and my family. But I believe that they took the hostages, A, to bargain and to get as much as they can from Israel. And that's what they're trying to do now, to get, you know, as many prisoners and as many days of stopping the war and other things and to save their own lives. And I think that was their way of trying to make sure that we don't annihilate Hamas and destroy Hamas specifically. And that's why I think that if we want to destroy Hamas and we want to destroy Hamas, we have to first make sure that the hostages are here home first. And I think it's also a part of spreading the hate, the hatred and death, like I said before, in the heads and minds and hearts of generations of Israelis and Palestinians. So you don't just do these horrible things, but you also brag about it. You also spread the word on the internet and you spread psychological terror all over, because when you spread hate, then your mission is complete. Then you can make sure that there's never peace between the two peoples. And I think that was a part of what they were trying to achieve and what they're trying to achieve now. When they hold hostages, they are trying to make us Israelis fight one another and try to, you know, say, no, the hostages come first. No, the war comes first. And these hostages, the women first or the elderly people first, whatever. And I really hope that they don't succeed in this, but it's a really hard fight.
What do you think needs to happen going forward? And also, how many hostages are still being held hostage right now?
136 hostages. Yeah. We don't know how many of them are alive and how many are dead. We don't know. And Hamas, of course, won't tell us. And if you ask me, the most important thing right now is to get as many hostages back home as possible, because time is running out. Yes. With every week, we're losing lives of hostages. They're at risk because they're held by a terror organization that does unbelievable things to them. And they're at risk because of the war. And that's why I think many people in Israel also believe that the most important goal is to get the hostages back. Then we have to make sure that there's no horrible terror organization, you know, holding hostage 2 million Palestinians and 10 million Israelis anymore. And, you know, posing such a horrible threat on Israel. That's a major goal, but it comes right after getting the hostages back. And then we can start building a new future for all of us.
What do you think about Western media calling the exchange of the hostages, like they always describing it like a symmetrical proportional exchange, like you get your hostages and they get their hostages. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in fact, Israel has hardened criminals from the Palestinian side in jail for a reason. Like, it's so unfair that they try to portray this like you have just hostages in the same way that they have hostages from Israel.
Yeah, I think that it's probably what Hamas is trying to do here, is trying to make it appear as if there are Palestinians just held in Israel for no reason. And there aren't. All these people that are being released are prisoners because they've done horrible things. Some of them killed innocent people, innocent Muslims and Jews, Palestinians and Israelis. These are criminals, and sometimes hard criminals. And on the other end, there are babies, elderly people, women and men. Some of them are sick, who are held without any reason whatsoever. This is not, it's not symmetrical in any way. And calling it a prisoner swap is just, it's just wrong.
Also, I've seen the sick games that Hamas plays, like a couple of weeks ago or what it was, when they sent like a video one day and say, look, these three are still alive or something. And then they said, like, tomorrow we'll see who is still alive. And then you got to see a video the day after in pictures.
Yeah, that was, I think that broke me. When I saw the first video, they presented it like a game show. It was, take a guess. They'd shown three hostages. We know that they were held hostage, but we didn't know whether they were dead or alive. Their names are Noa Al-Ghamani, that wonderful girl who was taken on a motorcycle. And we know her video just reaching her arms towards her partner, Avinatan, who was also taken hostage. She's there. And two other hostages are there, Itai and Diossi. And the three videos of them are there. And then they present it like a game show and say, take a guess. Are they dead or alive? You'll see tomorrow. And it's just, it's psychotic. It's psychotic. And I think none of us could sleep at night, because I didn't know Noa or Yossi or Itai before. But now I know their families. And they've become sort of a big family of mine, because we're all a big family in the hostage families form. And I've become really good friends with Itai's sister, Merav. And when we received the video the next day with Noa telling the story of how Itai and Yossi were killed, it's probably a false story with false facts, because it looks like she's just reading from a script, but they were also showing their bodies so that we know that they're actually dead, and that we fear, you know, the verdict of the other hostages there. And that was that broke me. That just broke me. I couldn't do it. I didn't know what to do. You know, we're fighting for this. This is all that we do for more than 100 days, just fighting it, telling the Israeli government and governments all over the world that they must do anything they can to make sure that no more hostages are being killed right now in Gaza, and to get them back home. And then you get a video like this showing this is exactly what we were fighting against, and now it's reality. And I couldn't even look at Merav's eyes in the farewell from Itai, because we tried so hard, but we failed, and it's just horrible.
It's like that level of evil. It's like, even if I try, it's so difficult to even come up with and imagine that level of evil, even if you wanted to. It's like, you give people, like after 100 days or so, you give people hope by showing them videos or pictures of their loved ones for the first time. And then tomorrow you'll see if they're dead or alive or not. It's like, who comes up with that?
Yeah, and you know, I think about the video editor who was sitting there editing the video with all these special effects,
and yeah,
must go on through his mind. What is he thinking?
Where's your soul?
Yeah. Something is so twisted in the reality, and it's our lives. It's our lives. I have to remind myself once in a while that this actually concerns my family, and that Carmel that, you know, I know since I was 0 years old is still there, and that we're still waiting to hear something from her. This is unimaginable. We have to stop it, and it's been gone for way, way too long.
Could you describe Carmel for us?
Yeah, sure. She's 39 years old. She's an occupational therapist. She is such a loving person. She loves people from all backgrounds and from all, you know, speaking all kinds of languages. And she loves traveling. She just came back from a 3-month trip to India, a place that she loves. She goes to India once a few years. She was there during COVID, and we told her, Carmel, we think you should come home. It's really dangerous to be there during COVID. And she said, no, I think I'm going to stay here. And she was in India during COVID, stayed there. And it was amazing to her. And she always wanted to come back to India. I think that while she's there, she thinks about, you know, coming back home. But the first thing she wants to do is to go back to India because it's a place she loves so much. And for us, she was just our cool eldest cousin that was always admirable for us. And we miss her. We miss her so much.
I understand. What keeps you able to do this? And where do you find strength to stand up in this fight and going forward?
I think the first thing that gives me strength is the news about Carmel and the fact that she found strength and she found light in this dark, dark place and was able to be strong for other people. And that's in a way what we're trying to do here for her. And that's a way of us being strong for ourselves, you know. I need somebody else to be strong for. And, you know, if you told me at the beginning of October that hostages are going to come back alive in a deal between Israel and Hamas, I'll tell you, no way, it's not possible. But then we found out that it was true. That's exactly what happened. In the end of November, they signed a deal and children started coming back and women started coming back, and elderly women and the wife of my cousin came back. So it's possible. It must be possible to do this again. Carmel was actually just a few hours away from also being released. She was supposed to be a part of the 8th day of the ceasefire, and then the deal collapsed. We were so close, so close. You know, it could break you in a way to know that it was so close and it never happened. But I try to think of it as, okay, we're still that close. We're still close. We know that it's possible. You can't tell me that it's not possible to get her back. I know that it's possible because I'd seen it and I'd seen the people that's supposed to do it actually making it happen. So I must believe that it's possible. And I believe, and I see the support of people all over the world who understand that it could have been just as well been their cousin or their mother or their grandfather or you know, son or husband over there. They understand and they're joining the fight and they're joining the campaign to show the pictures and tell the stories. This is what gives me strength and in a way gives me hope.
Do you know what made the deal collapse?
Sorry. Can you repeat that?
Do you know what made the deal collapse, like last minute, that it didn't work out?
There are many rumors. And as we understand it, Hamas claimed that it couldn't find all the women. They claimed it the day before and then they found them. And they were trying to give Israelis bodies, dead bodies of some hostages instead of living people of living with it. And there are many rumors, and you know, the sides keep on blaming each other. So I don't really know what's true, but I know that it collapsed, and that's what matters. And I know that they went back into fighting, and that for me it was a tragedy.
Do you know what Hamas is saying as their demands now? Like, are they still interested in like ceasefires, and is that their main demand for exchanging hostages?
I think that it's partly ceasefire, partly prisoners, partly, you know, making sure that the commanders of Hamas and Yahya Sinwar specifically are still alive and that their lives are safe. But you never know what exactly they want, because I'm not even sure that they tell you or Israel or the mediators exactly what they want. I think right now they just want this to continue. They want the war to keep on going. They have no interest in ending this war because they want more dead people on both sides. They don't have any interest for life of Israelis or for Palestinians. So I really hope that the pressure that we put on Qatar and on the US and on Israel to make this deal happen will bring out something.
Do you feel like the Israeli government is doing enough?
I believe that the Israeli government is able to make it happen. And so if the hostages aren't here, then they're not doing enough. And that's how I feel for myself. I believe that we as people, we as Israelis and people of the world, have the ability to make this crime against humanity stop. And if it's still going on, that means that we haven't done enough. That means that we have to keep on growing. And I think that you can never wake up in the morning with such a horrible crime going on and say, I've done all I can. If this is all you can and it hasn't stopped, then let other people do their job and replace you. Or do more, do whatever you can. Try to figure out new ways in which you can make it happen. I can't believe that they're doing anything they can, because if I believe that, then I'd have no hope, and I must have hope, because I'd see that this is possible, and I believe that they can bring the hostages back home.
Isn't this also a really important part and a core part of the Israeli identity and values, to never leave a man behind, to always save your people?
Yeah. Our beliefs in life is a major part of Judaism. And, you know, it's the Israeli agenda. We say, Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel is alive. And the concept of life is something that is very, very important in Israeli society. And we try to remind that to the people who have to, you know, make the decisions. And we try to remind it to the whole world who is, you know, judging Israel, even in The Hague right now, and judging Hamas in other terms because they're another country. And we are trying to remind the people that have to decide how we go about this war that the most important thing is life, and just as you said, no man is left behind and no woman is left behind. But it's tough, but we have to keep on doing this, because we know, you know, when the war started, it had 5 goals. None of the goals was returning the hostages. We were focused at other things, and we couldn't believe this as families of hostages. We said no way that we have relatives there, and no one will try to get them back. And that's when we started fighting and started, you know, the campaign to put this first on the agenda. And it worked. It's been since then a part of the 2 goals of the war. And now for many, many people, it's described as the first, one of the, on the priority to get the hostages back home. And we keep on working on it to make sure that it stays there. Because if we don't do this, we can't be sure that it's there.
Because I remember that story from some years ago. I think it was 2014 when you had one Israeli soldier who was captive, yeah. And then you exchanged, I think it was 1,000 prisoners to get this one soldier back.
Yeah, that was 2011, and his name is Gilad Shalit. And yeah, it took a very long time. It took, I think, more than 5 years to get him back. He was there for 5 years. And the people who mediated the deal said that it was the same deal that was on the table probably from 2 or 3 weeks after he was taken captive. So we know how this is going to end. We know that it's going to end in a deal. The deal that's going to bring the hostages back, probably send some prisoners, set them free. That's why we say, do it before it's too late for our relatives. Do it before there are no more hostages left to be released alive. Do it before we lose trust in the whole world and in our government specifically. I really hope that it's done in the next few days, because if not, I don't know what we'd do.
Why is Qatar the mediator, do you think?
Qatar funds Hamas. They pay hard money. And Israel actually delivered the money for years from Qatar to Hamas, because we believed that that was the way to make sure that Palestinians build themselves a brighter future there. And I don't really know what Qatar knew about this. And I think that Qatar now feels that when they see the horrible things that Hamas has done, they want the world to see them not as the Qatari money as, you know, covered in blood of my aunt and more than 1,000 Israelis, but as something that helped save lives. And I think that's why Qatar decided to mediate the deal and to be a part of the negotiations. And I really hope that they manage to do it. But it's not simple, you know. It's not simple to think that the people who funded this horrible, horrible terror attack are now mediating a deal between Israel and Hamas.
Do you believe they're doing a good job mediating in the negotiations? Are they honest and do they want the solution, like in your impression and your experience?
I have to tell you, I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not inside the negotiation room. And I know that there are people who have complaints about many things going on there. But I believe that we have to... all the parties that are part of this negotiation should stick together and think about the lives that are there to save and not about complaints that they have about one another. That would be, for me, unbelievable that the bad blood between negotiators is going to kill people eventually. And we have to make sure that this doesn't happen.
And I understand that Israel needs to eradicate Hamas so that this doesn't happen again, like that we don't have another 7th yes. of October. Because I've heard the videos where they're saying and warning that we will repeat this 7th of October again yeah. and again and again and again. Like, you should take them like for their word, like believe that when they're saying it. And that's why I'm wondering also, what do you think about that? And contrasting up towards, like, in my own country, in Norway, like, people are walking around with Palestinian flags and saying, like, end the genocide, end the bombings of Gaza. Like, they're only focused on that part of it and not thinking about the Israeli perspective on it. Like, only seeing Israel as, like, a country committing genocide. What do you think about those kinds of allegations that Israel is committing genocide in their fight against Hamas?
I think that many people don't understand what's going on in this war because they don't have information and because they can't really believe the level of evil, just like you said, that they see that we tell them what's going on and they say, we can't really believe that this is true. And they don't want to believe. And I think that I can totally understand people who want to see a brighter future for Palestinian people. I totally get that. I also want it. I really want a brighter future for Palestinians. I believe that every person should have a brighter future. And I want to see one day the flags of both Israel and Palestine waving together. Really, this is something I believe in. And many people who were, you know, massacred on October 7th believed in, and some of them still believe it. But the Hamas does not. Hamas supports war, a continuous war between Israelis and Palestinians, between Jews and Muslims, actually between Muslims and all the world. They believe that that's the way that their, you know, twisted Muslimhood should conquer the whole world that way, that horrible and that horrible way. And I know that that media outlets show what's going on in Gaza, but I want you to remember that what Hamas is doing in many cases is to hide their troops, to hide their terrorists inside places where citizens are living, inside hospitals sometimes. And they were actually making sure that civilians, innocent civilians, can't cross between the northern part of Gaza and the southern part of Gaza while Israel was bombing the northern part of Gaza. Israel gave the civilians a chance to move between the northern part and the southern part, but Hamas said, no, we want civilians to stay there because we want them to get hurt by the bombing. That's how twisted the ideology is. That's how you can understand that they don't care about life. And I know that it's hard to understand this level of evilness, but look at me and look at what happened to my family, and you'll understand that it's not a story, and it's not a movie, and it's not a horror film. It's reality. It's really what's going on here in Israel.
And I understand that actually Hamas really wants the Palestinian people, civilians, to die because they think that that will turn the West and turn the world against Israel, and that's ultimately what they want.
Yeah, they want hatred between Israelis and Palestinians, and they want the world to hate what Israel is doing, and that's one of the reasons why I think that we should make sure that this tragedy ends, because I don't want to see war between the two sides. I don't care for blood or for revenge. I think many Israelis feel like me. They just want to stay safe, and they want hostages to be back home, which is the most important thing.
What's it like? Because I understand, like, Israel is a multicultural society where you have both Jews and Arabics and Muslims and everyone, and even Palestinian people living in Israel.
That's right.
Do you know Palestinian people in Israel, and have you gotten any impression what it's like for them? What they are saying? Are they on the side of Israel and saying that we have to get Hamas, we have to get the hostages out? Or what kind of impression do you get from people who are actually from Palestine?
I can tell you that we have Palestinians in the hostages families forum, because some of them were also murdered by Hamas and taken hostage by Hamas. Hamas has also taken Palestinian hostages from Israel and held them for more than 50 days and now for more than 100. And I think that tells you all the story that has to be told. Some people were afraid that Palestinians inside Israel will turn against Israel when the war started. But when they saw how horrible was what Hamas was doing, and they saw that what they were doing to Palestinians and Israel, to Jews and Muslims, then it was all understood and just it was clear that if you want to live, if you want to be on the side of life, you have only one side to support. And the Palestinian Israelis have been just wonderful, helpful. They were a part of this, you know, very complicated society for many years. And there's a high level of racism in Israel between Jews and Muslims. But right now, we feel together. We're together against this horrible force of evil. And I really hope that it stays that way even when the war is over.
When the IDF and Israel is going into Gaza and attacking and trying to get Hamas, are you also nervous that some of the weapons or the bombs might hit people who are being held captive?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a major fear for me. We know from the testimonies of hostages who came back that they could hear the bombings, and sometimes, you know, some of the bombs even hit the places where the hostages were held. And we now know that 3 hostages were actually killed from crossfire, from IDF crossfire. We know that because the IDF said that. It was, of course, an accident, a horrible accident. And I don't blame the soldiers who did that, because Hamas is doing whatever they can to make sure that it's really hard for the IDF soldiers to fight. And it plays recordings of Hebrew and babies crying so that the soldiers come and don't shoot. And then they attack them. Yeah, it's unbelievable, and that's how these kind of things happen, and that's why this war is so complicated, such a complicated war to fight, and that's a part of the reason we were really fighting when the war started, and yeah, I know that the IDF is doing whatever they can to make sure that they don't hit hostages or civilians, you know, in general. But there are always accidents, and that's what we fear the most. That the war is going to risk the lives of the hostages, and that Hamas is just going to shoot them because they're afraid that Israelis are just going to find them or something, and they shoot them as a part of their protocol.
How much do you think Hamas is actually just another name for Iran?
I know that Iran controls Hamas in some ways, but I know Qatar also does that. And I think, you know, Hamas are Sunnis and Iran are Shia, but these are both, different parts of Islam. So it's not exactly the same thing. But we know that in a way we are fighting a bigger war against Iran right now. And the whole world should understand it, because they're posing threats toward the whole world, not just Israel.
Are people in Israel worried for another 7th of October attack, that it would have more terror attacks coming up?
I think we know now that because this October 7th happened in the south, then Hezbollah, that was planning a similar thing in the north, it would be less likely that they would do it right now, because we are now prepared for this specific kind of attack. But we know that we have to expect the unexpected. You know, you have to make sure that you are always ready to defend yourself, always ready, and never think that nothing is that something is impossible.
What do you think about people in the West, especially here in Norway? We're the worst on this, I think, supporting with Palestinian flags everywhere. What do you think about people here calling for, like, ceasefire now? Israel has to stop the bombing. Ceasefire is the most important thing.
I think that they don't understand what's going on in this war. I think that they probably forgot that what happened on October 7th and they don't understand that we can't live with such a threat to our lives. We can't live in a place where you know that people can just come one morning and take you out of your bed, kill your wife and take you hostage. I think you'd understand it if you thought about it yourself. And would you accept this kind of threat? And I think they've forgotten about the hostages. They've forgotten about the more than 136 hostages still held there. And this war could never end if the hostages aren't back home.
I think it's so terrible. Like, some of the images have just burned itself on my retina. Like, especially the image and video, this mother who has kind of like red hair and she has those two kids on her arms. And she's, I understand that she's still held hostage with her babies.
That's the Bibas family.
Yeah.
And it's two children, Phil and Eliel. Phil just turned 1 year old 1 week ago and spent more than a quarter of his life in captivity right now. And they're still held by Hamas, and there were, you know, conflicting messages about whether they're dead or alive, so we don't know. But we really hope that they are, because it breaks the hearts of the whole world, I think, if they learn that they killed these three people, this innocent two redhead babies and their mother for no reason.
You've got no life signs, no videos, no images, nothing from them.
No. And I know that their father, Yarden, is also held hostage, and they told him that his three family members were killed. And there was a video of him getting the message and crying. They were airing this video, you know, sharing this video to us so that we see how he reacts to the news. That's the level of evilness, viciousness that we're dealing with right now. Yeah.
So insane.
Insane.
What? How can the world and people listening now, how can we help?
First, spread awareness, because some people still believe that it's all fake. Some people still believe that it never happened and think that it was just invented by people. You know, that's why people were tearing up posters all over the world, posters of kidnapped hostages. Spread awareness. Let the world know that there are still hostages being held, and keep on spreading the word of bring them home. That's so simple to say, bring them home. Because it sounds simplistic in a way, because, you know, it's the most it's supposed to be easy. Just get women and babies and elderly people back home, right? But they're not doing this, and they're not doing this because they think that the world is going to forget. That just like we said never again, and that you can never forget what happened in the Holocaust, they believe that people can forget this and let this just go by. Never again is now. This is the time to fight this. And this is our moral fight. And we have to win this, because if we don't, then there are going to be many October 7th, not in Israel, but in many other parts of the world, in Europe and in America, and all, and in Asia, and all over the world. We know this. And it doesn't even have to be Islamic Jihad. It could be any terror group that's going to decide that they do this, and then they can get whatever they want. We have to make sure that the world understands that this is a life and death conflict, and that it doesn't have to do with supporting, you know, Israel in general or Palestine in general, Jews in general or Muslims in general. You can be Muslim and be as hurt from Hamas as me. And there are Muslims that I know that are on my side on this, because they are part of the hostage families form and they have relatives over there. And when you understand it, then you must be on the right side of this, on the life, on the side of life, supporting, bringing the hostages home and ending this horrible, horrible tragedy.
And also, like you're saying, like there are Palestinian, Arabic speaking hostages and Jewish hostages. But how much of this, like 7th October, do you feel was an expression of anti-Semitism? Because that's an element of it too, right?
I think that the attack wasn't exactly anti-Semitism, but the way the world reacted to it was driven by anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you'd seen an attack like this done on any other kind of people, you would immediately understand how horrible it is and what kind of a crime against humanity it is. And because this is Israel and because most of the people hurt are Jews, I think that the anti-Semitism was a great part in how the world reacted. And if you asked me before October 7th, I'd tell you that there is no more anti-Semitism and that this is just it's a legend and it's gone. And now I know that I've been blind to it. I know that there are people who still just look at Jews and see something different than when they look at other minorities or other groups of people in the world, and that hate Israel for many reasons and don't just have it's not just that they want to see a two-state solution between Israel and Palestine or something, which is something I want to see too. But they actually hate Israelis and think that we as Israelis deserve to die. There are people who believe that. I don't think it's a big majority of the world, but there are people who believe that, and there is anti-Semitism. I mean, we have to fight it as well.
Do you have any advice for people experiencing anti-Semitism in their country, in their society, personally? What's the best way to fight against anti-Semitism?
I don't know if I have the right answers to that question. I think that when I encounter hate, and I encounter a lot of hate these days, I encourage hate from Israelis who don't want to see me fighting for the hostages.
Why don't they want that?
Some Israelis see that as a part of showing weakness, or I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. But I really don't want to be focused on that. I receive a lot of hate from Muslims and from Israelis. And when I try to talk to people and present myself as a person and try to be empathic and try to show empathy to them, that's when a conversation starts.
Yeah.
And they can understand that there's a human being on the other side and that I see them as a human being and that they can see me as a human being. And that's the beginning of something. And I don't know if it cures anti-Semitism, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
Well, Gil, thank you so much for talking to me today. I think that can be the final word. And I thank you so much for the fight that you're doing and fighting for getting the hostages back. You're doing a very important job. And I want to say I wish you all the best, and to your family, and to Carmel is still there. And I really hope that that you get all 136 hostages out.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.